Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Professor Alan Kring of the Department of Finance, Insurance, and Law. This is my teaching assistant, Ms. Meredith Springer. You can call me Professor Kring or Professor C. She is Ms. Springer. And we will be your guides to finance for this semester. A few cautions up front. I'm loud and aggressive. I ask questions of you, and I expect you to give me more than I don't know for an answer. This class is part the book, where you will learn what to do for the homeworks that are in Cengage, and we will have a Cengage representative in here in just a little bit to walk you through that. And then my lectures, which are the content that will be on quizzes and exams. Background on me, I've been a teacher for 45 years, and I have run a lot of businesses myself, most into bankruptcy, but that's another story. In the 1990s, I owned a penny stock house, which closed very quickly, thanks to government state regulators. And then I became a consultant, and I got into a very dark world of consulting, and I got out of it in the early 2000s, barely with my life. I run my own company. It has been a corporation for 13 years. It's called Emergent Light Studio, Inc., and that is the company I use to sell the art and photographs, prints of art and photographs that I create. And so I will be bringing in my own company, companies for which I consulted as part of the practical applications in finance that you will be seeing. Now, a couple of pointers along the way. First off, I do not want you to be using pencil and paper or financial calculators to do the finance problems. You use Excel. I have Excel templates for all of the major problem groups in this class, and I also will require that you get an Excel certification, either through Wall Street Prep or Udemy. Those two are a fee, like $20, $30, if you know how to do it, get the, or you can use LinkedIn Learning. And that one is free as long as you have hooked your personal LinkedIn account up to your ISU account, because we pay for this. That means that if once we have shown you how to link your two accounts, your personal account to your ISU credentials, you can do all the LinkedIn Learning for free instead of paying for a fee for it. So that's probably your most cost-effective option for getting the certification that I require. And I do this because every business that is in operation is using Excel now. And most people say, well, I know Excel. You will see that Excel is a vast ocean. And fortunately, you don't have to know all of it, but you have to know enough to be able to use the templates that I give you effectively. Two other points here. Just as a quick thing for you. First things first. Let's try this. You should have received an email message. Well, you did if you registered from Codify to download an app called Attendance Radar. At some point every day of class, I say, turn on your smartphone, go in there, and get your attendance logged in. It's a Bluetooth signal that's sent out. It's not a tracking device like a lot of attendance software is. It's just a Bluetooth signal, and once it goes live, you have 15 minutes to log in your attendance, and that's the way I can keep track of who's in the class and who's not. Our two biggest problems right now in universities in the United States are attendance and cheating. And on the attendance, we're now, a lot of professors are simply taking attendance. It marks as part of your grade. And so we're taking it very seriously. The cheating aspect is getting very difficult for us, especially with the use of ChatGPTs. Now, Ms. Springer and I are both certified in artificial intelligence and in other emerging technologies. And I'll tell you right now, ChatGPTs are the hillbillies of AI. They are dumb as a box of rocks. And I can set up all kinds of chat traps, and people will go for them, and then I know that you were using a ChatGPT instead of using your own brain to do a test. To give you an example, last semester, it got so bad that on the final exam, we were trying not to have anyone on the back row, but they managed to get back there anyway so they could use their chats. One student finished the final exam in, what, 16 minutes or so? Yeah. And so we don't want to do that. So that's why we're using Respondus Lockdown Browser for all of your tests, for in-class quizzes and tests. Ouch. Now, in order to do that, go into your, if you go down here, you'll see, well, that's really not what I, oh, I need the syllabus. Now, the Lockdown Browser, you can download it for Windows or for Mac. If I can find it, where the heck, I'm not seeing it right now. The Respondus, if I don't see it, where is it? It might be. Yeah, it says it in there. Oh, look at this. This is not correct. How did that get back in there? I changed it. Okay. I'll have to revise the syllabus. It looks like there's something that snuck back in there. But you download, there's a version for Windows and a version for Mac. Download those, and I'll send you out an email message with the links tonight, since it looks like it didn't get baked in the syllabus where it was supposed to. I don't get this, because I just looked here, and it was all there, and now it's back to the old one. Okay. No, this is spring. For guy pity, it's... I'm looking at the long syllabus, for heaven's sakes. Oh, by the way, I'm glad I'm doing this. You see this right here? This says 01, but you're in section 02. The way it works is that 01 is the parent, and any other course I teach, 240, is called a child. So they'll show the parents 001. You're in 002. This is the one you want to use. What is going on here? Yeah, that's fall. Okay. Wow, that was a little scary there. I thought I was losing my mind. Okay, yeah, there we go. There. So now, here's the link to download the Lockdown, the Respondus Lockdown Browser for Windows. This is the one for Mac. Mac seemed to have a little bit more emotional trouble with the Lockdown Browser than the Windows does. If you are having a problem with the Lockdown Browser working, call 8-HELP, that's the IT help desk, and they'll get you so that it's set up. This weekend, I'm going to put up a practice quiz for you that uses the Lockdown Browser. This is just so that you can know that it's working for you for the rest of the semester. If something is going sideways for you, you get right on IT's help desk call line and get it resolved so that you have it available to you to use. I've been told that there is also an issue with Chromebooks too right now, but I don't know that for a fact. But IT can help you get through this mess if that's a problem. Now, as far as other matters in the syllabus, you need to read it because there are requirements in here that are rock solid. Like attendance, you have to do the attendance on the day that it happens here in the class. If it doesn't work, come up here at the end of the class. We won't take you granted an attendance that is, you say a couple weeks later, well, I noticed that you didn't give me attendance. No, it has to be, you have to tell us right away that you didn't get an attendance for the day at the end of class. Other matters in that regard. Everything else should be good. So if you registered just in the last couple of days, you probably won't have gotten that email message from Attendance Radar. It'll come in as the company's called Codify. And if you didn't get that, if because you were registered late, just let us know and we'll get it fixed up. We'll get you so you get that email to download the app. The app is for smartphones, Android, and iOS. You can choose either one. But once you got that in there, all you have to do is when I say, I'm taking attendance, you'll be able to just go into the app and it'll show me right away that you're here. Now, scan for attendance, yeah. Just do the scan for attendance, of course. But you'll see it's easy to do, and I'm going to want you to do that here. As a matter of fact, why don't I just do that now? Just get it out of the way for the day. Okay, it's live now, 15 minutes to find the attendance. If it doesn't work for you, just come up, something's going sideways, just come up after class and we'll get it hooked up for you. We'll make sure that you're in. Again, though, if you just registered in the last few days for this course, you won't see it, obviously, because you don't have the Attendance Radar app on your phone yet. Okay, let me proceed with the lecture now. As I said, the lecture has a lot of terminology, and we have help sheets and PowerPoints to provide you with the terminology as I'm pouring it out to you. Let me show you, first of all, as something that will be very useful to you. I podcast all of my lectures. I've been doing this since the early 2000s. I was one of the first education podcasters that Apple allowed onto the iTunes. But this is the course site where the lectures, now this is last semester because there haven't been any lectures this time, but isu-prof.com. This has nothing to do with Canvas. These are my private education websites I use for this content. And this is where you can listen to the lectures. I usually get them up on the parent site here within a couple of hours. I have to process them. Apple has always expected a professionalism in the podcasts and all that. Introductory music is good and all that. So it takes me a while. Now, once they are up, within a minute, the spiders pick them up. So Apple picks it up, Google Podcast picks it up, a lot of services. But here's the course site. If you click here, you will actually hear that lecture. And if you click on it in a PC, it'll probably be Windows Media Player. If you're on Apple, Mac, it'll be QuickTime. But you can play the lecture right there. You can listen to this anytime, day or night, when you're eating, when you're sleeping, when you're going to the toilet, whatever. You can you'll relive the dream of my lectures, okay? And or if you don't want to be on my creepy site, you can listen to them on Apple iTunes. Well, they call it Apple Podcasts now. It's iTunes. Now, these usually show up there within a minute or two of when I publish them on the course site here. And as you can see, these are last semester's lectures because I have guy content up for this semester yet. But this is what you have that is available to you 24/7, anywhere you are. You can listen to my podcasts and enjoy yourselves. A good thing about these is that I pour information at you very quickly, a lot. And in the first few weeks, you will be missing a lot of things that I say. So this helps you fill in your notes and for prepping for exams, quizzes, and all that. It's certainly a great resource for you to go back and listen to these and follow them in your notes to see what you missed that I said. But the way you do this, if you come over here on my site, click on this first graphic on the left, and that will take you over to my Apple iTunes. You can bookmark the site, and there you are. You can have that, and you can go there if you want to listen to my podcast on Apple instead of on my website. Now, on my website, There are other, there's assignments that are due. And I also have a scrolling marquee. This is for more information about the class. Like if I were to die, I would put it up here and tell you when I was going to come back to keep going. Another thing that you can follow here is that these are lectures. These ones are 240 lecture, whole classes for years backwards in time. So if I give you a lecture and you say, well, he didn't really explain bonds that well, go back to another semester and listen, find the bonds lecture and you listen to it there. These are more for legacy background. The podcasts are the same every semester. The content is slightly different depending upon what I'm saying on a given day, but these are certainly available for you as well. And there are some other resources for you here too, as you can see. But again, probably tonight I will have cleared out the old semester and I'll have the new semester in there for you. I'm trying to think if there's anything else critical. I'm going to turn it over to our Cengage representative, Mr. Chris Olson, and he'll walk you through the process of getting yourself registered with Cengage and all of that. And then once he's finished, we'll dive into the first day's content. Without further ado, you're live.
Thanks. How's everybody doing today? It's literally gotten 10 degrees hotter than I was in here 2 hours ago. I don't know what it is, but it's like...
Every day, except for today, as I said, we start with a look at the numbers, where I introduce you to stock markets, bond markets, and other types of markets like commodities markets. And we spend about 10 minutes talking about what the market conditions are and why they are the way they are. My purpose in this is to give you practical, real-world, useful knowledge that you can make so that you can make decisions on your own about investments. You don't need to listen to talking heads or your friend who has a friend who knows someone in. You will be getting the straight numbers. You will look at them. You will learn how to analyze them. I spend my nights working with my former students who are now traders on Wall Street and in Chicago so that they are giving me all the knowledge that they have and I'm giving them the knowledge that I have. And so 24/7, the world is clocking in these markets. Now, in this class, I am approaching this from the perspective of a capitalist system, which we are. Now, as a broad outline, simplistically put, there are three essential organizational structures of economies. They all have to answer three questions: what to produce, how to produce it, and for whom to produce it. There is the command economy, where those questions are answered, what, how, and for whom, by simply there is some central authority that tells you what to produce, how to produce it, and for whom. A good example of that would be a communist economy, and the purest example would probably be North Korea, which is not a paradise, but that's their way. There were communist economies all over Eastern Europe, from Russia on to the Berlin Wall, but those aren't here anymore. Then you have the economies that are market economies. What to produce? What makes us money? How to produce it efficiently? And for whom? For whoever can pay the price that we are asking. And so that's a market economy, which is mostly what ours is. Now, there are mixed economies, and there is a certain amount of that in our economy and in many of the economies of the world, where there are certain necessities or priorities that are commanded of us to produce. But those generally tend to be pretty soft. Then there are versions of mixed economies that are more binary. For example, in Sweden, their overlying superstructure is a type of economic system called fascism. Now, this fascism in this is not some dire Hitler thing. Fascism is just where the government and very powerful corporations are one and the same. And in Sweden, that's the way it is at the very top. Then at the bottom, it is a purely socialist system. So everyone is provided what they need all at any given time. The interesting thing is that that Swedish model works phenomenally well, and versions of it in other parts of the world. However, we choose not to do that, although ostensibly we choose not to do that. But ours is largely a market economy. And this market economy is characterized by some unusual features that you would not see in others. But I start with an example of, for the purpose of giving you a very harsh reality of what we are in our economy, what you need to become comfortable with in order to be successful in our economy. It starts with a simple example. You, sir, are a bread maker in a nice village. You are the only bread maker in that village. Now, because you're the only bread maker, you don't care what you charge. People have to pay it. So you can use your resources just whatever you want. You take flour and throw it into this big pot. Whoa. And some falls on the floor. Whatever. You hire your lazy brother here, who all he ever does is sit in the basement and eat Cheetos and play World of Warcraft. Really? World of Warcraft? Geezer? Cyber Geezer play? Why should you care? Because you can charge whatever you want, because they have to buy your bread. Now, you, madam, have you ever met or seen anyone who just doesn't deserve all the money he or she has? Kanye comes to mind. You know? And you look at him, and you lousy, inefficient dog. I can do just what you do, but not waste the resources. I will be very careful in measuring out the flour and all the other ingredients. And I will do everything just like he does, except efficiently, using the same resources he does. That is called static efficiency. Static efficiency comes from just using your resources more and more efficiently. Static efficiency. However, we can take this further. You, madam, see what she's doing and you think, I could do that better. I could use another technology. Now, the word technology in our culture has come to mean computers. Technology in your home, technology in your car, technology in your butt. No, technology is just how you arrange the factors of production. How much of each one you use. For example, should you use computers or should you use calculators? Should you use human labor or should you use mechanical machines to do something? That's what technology is. And you have figured out, well, I could get rid of some of these workers and use assembly lines with machines to do these. You know, put the bread in with a machine and then bring it out and have some machine that scoops perfect amounts to make bread out. That is called dynamic efficiency. Dynamic efficiency is efficiency that is derived from utilizing a more efficient technology. Dynamic efficiency. And we have been doing this since time began of the human experience. We had these old cultures that would take stones and pound them out so that they made sort of like a club. Kill. And then they figured out flint, a new resource. And we can chip it and make a blade that is extremely sharp with it. That is a technological innovation. Technology is not something of this era. It has always been there. The technologies that were computers, they made a lot more efficiency. They got rid of jobs that people did. And artificial intelligence is going to wipe out many of the higher paying jobs because it can do it and it never cries for a vacation or health benefits. It will replace us. These are dynamic efficiencies. Okay, so what has happened here is that you went into business to take his customers away from him. And that's what you did too. You went into business to take hers. This had nothing to do with, oh, I love customers. I want to make them a nutritious product and all that. Bullshit. Yeah, it has nothing to do with it. You did what you did to drive him out of business so you could take his money, and that's what you did too. There is no question that what you did was for the purpose of exercising greed. And in the process, we created a more efficient production. The bottom line is that greed is not an evil. Greed is good. Greed works. Greed drives us to what we want to achieve. And that's the other part about it. We want more. More of life. More of health. More of entertainment. More of sex. More of just living and being happy. That is not evil. That is the basis of capitalism. That is the basis of a market economy. And it works. The problem is, well, does this not lead us to unbridled greed, destruction, and all that? Yes, it can. But it also has natural stops on it. What happens if you've made this bread, you dominate the market now, you've got control of it, and your bread tastes like ass? You have kids, and mom brings the kids, oh, mommy, I don't want that bread, tastes like ass. Oh, shut up, there's kids starving in China, they'd love to have a butt sandwich right about now. You understand that you can't make butt bread. There are natural stops because people will go back. Well, your bread's more expensive, but at least my breath doesn't offend people. That's the bottom line of what we are doing in this model, is that there are natural stops. Now, they don't always work. And there is a role for a higher authority to put limits on how far we can take our greed. In some eras, we have those limits very tight. And in other eras, we have them far too loose, and we have catastrophes like the crash of 29 and the Great Depression that followed it. So we cannot ignore the fact that greed does lead to adverse outcomes when it is not controlled. The best control for greed is competition. There's always a hungry dog waiting outside. That's the perfect example of what we know is the limit on us. Someone would find our customers. Now, we don't care about those customers, really. We care about their money. That's really the reality of it. However, it's part of our marketing to say that we do. That's part of our greed, is to find ways to gaslight, to make people believe that our product is better. That's competition. And the competitors are vicious. And as I will show you in these stock markets and bond markets, second to second, the prices are bouncing up and down randomly as the hungry dogs on both sides of the trade look for advantage. And in that process, we find something highly desirable. It's called the equilibrium price. And it is not like in economics where they draw the supply and demand curves. Now, don't get me wrong. I have an advanced degree in economics. But it's not supply and demand. There's the equilibrium price. No, it's a fuzzy ball. It's moving around. And the more competitors and traders and active market participants there are, the more it will bounce. But it is always trying to find the place where the quantity being supplied is going to be cleared by the demand, quantity demanded at that price. understand that. Let me ask a question here. Let me try this, madam. What is business?
It is a service or a type of, basically where you're selling something.
Okay. We're kind of part of it there. Let me try. Madam, what is business?
It's a group that makes and then sells something.
A group?
It doesn't have to be a group.
You backed off that real quick. Wait a minute, I am a sole proprietor. Let me give you a working definition. Now, you don't have to worry about this for now. But business is any organized activity that takes inputs and produces some kind of output. It could be a service, it could be a good. But it has to be organized, and it has to take something and turn it into something else. I can't just pick a rock up off the ground, buy this. It has to have something put into it. It might just be pure marketing hype, but something has to go into it. In my own business, I create art and I create photographs that are absolutely beautiful, but that isn't enough. I have to put together, in many cases, either an online platform for an e-commerce solution or at art shows, art exhibits. I put up, I get frame, mat, museum glass, backing, wire, and all that kind of stuff. I take different factors of production and I put them together in an organized way so that I have something that wasn't there before. And then I can sell it, or at least try to. Now, there are different organizational types of business, but almost every one of you has done business, has been in a business, or has been a business. Now, I want to focus first on you have been a business. If you go out, you mow lawns. That's a business. You took factors of production, and you applied them to create an output, a nice lawn. On the other hand, I walk dogs and cats. Well, you don't walk cats, you kind of drag them. But you're trying to get your offering, your human labor, and some human capital, and maybe some physical stuff like a pooper scooper, and you are turning that into something else that is completely different from the inputs that are involved. That is a business. And almost every one of you has done one of these. Babysitting, house sitting, pet walking, a lemonade stand. You have been a business. And this is timeless. There are more sole proprietorships. In other words, one person shows in the world than there are any other organizational type. Now, a variation on the sole proprietorship is a partnership. It's the same thing, except it's more than one person. And I'll get into this more in the next lecture. But then there is this triumphant solution to the business problem. It's called a corporation. I've created corporations, and I will show you how you do it. Actually, it's kind of creepy how easy it is. Just some money and some paperwork now online, and you can create your own business. As a matter of fact, in 2012, in a Business 100 class, I actually turned my sole proprietorship, which was called Emergent Light Studio, into a corporation during that class. Called Emergent Light Studio, INC, period. That, and all of a sudden, I had created something different from a sole proprietorship, something that is fundamentally different. And I will tell you how that's fundamentally different in the next lecture. The book goes through it too, but I'm going to put a lot of the emphasis on how important this form of business, this organizational structure called the corporation is. It's an amazing invention, and it has propelled us to where we are now in terms of development of the country. And so But it's also has led to some pretty bad stuff as well. In some of the certification programs, I do certification programs in different topics in finance and economics and resource management and all that for second world countries, developing countries, emphasizing the importance of creating this these animals called corporations. Because oftentimes they see more of a holistic kind of life where we do this business and then we have, it's part of our family and all that. And trying to pull them over to understand why the corporate structure is superior. And unfortunately, there are institutional barriers on this as well as cultural barriers. We've gotten over those completely. But in some ways, their ways, what they do is better, but not in a world of ravenous dogs like the corporations are that they would be facing in international trade. It's just they have to understand this corporate model and why it's so fundamentally important. But oh, good grief. Maybe a little later. Okay. The next point that I want to bring up here, well, let me write this down real quick here. Is this the one? No, this. Okay. The sole proprietorship. This is the fundamental doing of business. Two problems with it. One is that there's no protection for you from the risks that you take. You mow lawns, and that's what you do for a living. You're mowing this fancy, you know, you mow lawns of very wealthy people, and you're going, and you run over their poodle. And you give that dog a show dog trim. Well, they're going to sue you. And when I say sue you, they are going to sue you. Not a company. It's just you. They will take your lawnmower. They will take your ugly ass truck. They will take your Bible. And they will take your parents away from you and sell them. Is that harsh? I will do it to you if you hit my cat. I'm a cat person. You have no protection. Now, here's the other problem with it. Did you know, sir, that you are going to die someday? You will. It'll hurt, you'll bitch, and then you'll finally shut up and die. When that happens, your sole proprietorship is gone because it is just you. Well, I'm going to give my business to my kids. No, you're not. There is no business. Your business is down there in that grave, getting eaten and nibbled by worms and eaten by larger things that finally bust through your casket. You understand that it is gone. It is mortal. It is just you. Now, you can use a fictitious name. And you go through an application process. In some states, they call it an assumed name. In others, they call it a fictitious name. I have, as a matter of fact, in some of my lectures, older lectures, you will hear me talk about production by Dark Wraith Publishing. That was a sole proprietorship. That was a fictitious name for me. I actually, some years ago, for a company I had, it was just a fictitious name, but I went to the bank and I showed them that I had a certificate to use this from the state of Illinois, and they said, so I said, well, you know, if I bring in checks written on this fictitious name, they're mine, and they looked at the certificate and they said, okay, that's cool. It's still me. It's just a fictitious name. Now, this partnership, a little bit different. But it's actually the same partnership. It's just more than one person all at risk. That's why I got to be careful. Because if I decide foolishly that you will make a great partner for me, and then you screw up, you know what? That's not your screw up. That's ours. I can't point. No, jointly and severally liable. That's all. And if one of us dies, the partnership is dead. It's gone. So in other words, if you die because of those excesses, you know, that you go through, seeing you, yeah, I can tell there's a lot of them. No, there aren't. The thing, though, is that the partnership's over. You're saying, now, wait a minute, fat boy. I know this isn't true. I've seen these partnership law firms, 150-year-old law firm, it was a partnership. It's still around. No, it's not. You see, because if a partner dies, they formed the original founding partnership agreement so that essentially the partnership collapses and then comes back to life without you in it because you can't do anything anymore because you're dead. So a partnership is just as mortal as a sole proprietorship. That's where the corporation comes in. It's immortal. It has no theoretical end to its life because it is its own entity and it has no physicality, no corporality to it. It is just a document. But it has full legal representation as its own entity. Well, I own that corporation. It's all mine. No, it's not. You are an owner, but you are not the corporation. That is the key, is that any liability falls to the corporation instead of to its owners. Do you understand how that makes it easier for me to bear risk? I had at shows back in the day when I was still a sole proprietorship, I'd go to these art shows. I have all the set up, the wireframes and all this kind of stuff. And these easels with these big, beautiful paintings in them. And then one day this kid comes running through, kicks one of the easels. The thing falls on the ground, shatters into a million pieces. And then the woman is in there yelling at me about how I almost cut her precious little snot. I had to be so diplomatic. I said, look, bitch, you know, it's not what you think. But once I am a corporation, she can't touch me. She can hit the corporation, but she can't touch me because the corporation is a legal entity. It is its own thing under the law. And that's why the corporation was a powerful innovation in the rise of capitalism, is because it allowed the owners to bear risks that they never would have taken on their own. But the corporation will, because the corporation is just a piece of paper. And it'll just sit there letting me do whatever I want with it. Okay, I'm tired of you. I'm so over you today. Go home.